Support for NPR comes from the Alfred P. Sloan Foundation, working to enhance public understanding of science, technology, and economics in the modern world.
This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. School is out for the summer, and many teens are doing what their predecessors have done for years, searching for and working at summer jobs. Now, these are jobs that certainly won't make you rich, but will give you valuable experience and a little spending money. But other area teenagers are taking a different course. That may have a big payoff, not in just experience, but in money now and in the future. They are entrepreneurs, and we're going to meet a few this hour and talk about what I think is a new approach to summer. April Miller is co-founder of Lilacs and Company, which manufactures what they describe as a line of bow ties with, quote, southern charming accents specially designed to fit the traditional way of life. Although they have laid out a few bow ties in front of me on the desk, and I don't know that they're all that traditional. Welcome to the program, April.
Thank you for having us, Mike.
You're very welcome. Also with us is Daniel Fogel, Executive Professor of Strategy at Wake Forest University Charlotte Center. Nice to have you here.
Thank you.
And Chelsea Cote is Director of Resource Development with Junior Achievement of the Central Carolinas. Nice to have you here as well.
Thank you.
And Johnny Brooks is with us by phone from Myrtle Beach. He is also a young entrepreneur, a teen entrepreneur, who is the founder of a company called Paint Drop, which we'll talk about at some length. You're not going to believe what this company does. If you're over the age of maybe 30, you won't believe this. Johnny, thank you for being here. I appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for having me.
First of all, let me begin with the two older folks in the room here. Is this a new phenomenon, or have there always been teenage entrepreneurs who use the summer break in high school, or maybe even the high school year, to go out there and start businesses and do things we don't expect them to do?
Well, Mike, I don't think it's necessarily a new phenomenon. However, I do think with the economic recession, teens understand now that they can't necessarily just go to college, graduate, and get a job. So they're thinking alternatively. They're exploring different options and really thinking about what skills and passions they have that they can contribute to the market at an early age and develop before they're looking for a job.
Now, that's Chelsea Cote, who's Director of Resource Development for Junior Achievement of the Central Carolinas. Mm-hmm. And I have to say, Chelsea, that you don't look much older than April, who is a high school graduate now?
Yes,
sir. Just recently? Mm-hmm. Did you get your start in junior? Did you work with Junior Achievement when you were in school?
I did, actually. As a young person, I grew up in Concord and was fortunate to be able to participate in Junior Achievement. Mm-hmm. It's an extraordinary program, and I really feel like it is such a wonderful way to develop students and encourage them to develop the skills that they're going to need after graduation, before they graduate, and really explore those skills, explore what skills that they have that they can contribute.
And Dr. Vogel, I ask you the same question. If this is not a new phenomenon, is it changing in any way? In other words, to me, a teen entrepreneur when I was a kid is the guy who went around and said, can I cut your grass for $5? That's not the way it is now.
No, not at all. In fact, for undergraduate admissions, a lot of questions are asked about what you did with your summers. And
right,
they're very responsive. The admission officials are very responsive to people who have tried new ideas, tried businesses.
Now, it occurs to me that when I was in high school, the word entrepreneur was never uttered by anybody.
Exactly.
It's a relatively, it's not a new word, but it seems to me that the whole idea of entrepreneurship is something that has really taken on a luster in the last several years.
And there's a couple things there. One thing is actually have legitimacy now at university. So when people studied entrepreneurship and were entrepreneurship faculty, for example, at business schools, they had no credibility. But now it's a legitimate area of study.
Why would it have no credibility prior to recent days?
It was looked at. What's so different? What was the question? What's so different about an entrepreneur from a regular business that they can't learn just business skills?
Well,
lot different.
Okay, what is different?
A lot different is, first of all, your funding base. You know, it's the three Fs, friends, family, and fools fund you. And you don't get the traditional funding. There was no infrastructure. There was no capital markets for entrepreneurship at the time. Now we have very capable capital structure. Another thing about it is that you don't use the traditional skills that you use. For example, strategic planning makes very little sense in an entrepreneurial effort because it changes so much. You get all sorts of opportunities that are presented to you when you actually do your business and makes you a lot of changes, where a mature business has a much more of a sense of itself. So there's a lot of differences.
So is this the kind of thing that Junior – I know the Junior Achievement works primarily with younger people. It's now just beginning to branch out, if I understand this correctly, into high school age people. Because I remember Junior Achievement from clubs in the fifth grade, sixth grade, seventh grade. Mm-hmm. Do you talk about being an entrepreneur with these kids who are that young?
Absolutely. Junior Achievement has existed in Charlotte since 1958, and a lot of the people that we talked to that participated when they were young years ago, it really was focused on entrepreneurship, and they would create a product and they would market that product among their friends and family. Now Junior Achievement really focuses on financial literacy, workforce readiness, and entrepreneurship, which really are all intertwined. You really can't have one without the other. So we work primarily in K-12 classrooms, so we really do seek to serve every student, and the idea is to serve them from, you know, kindergarten until graduation. In Charlotte Mecklenburg schools, we serve primarily elementary school at this point, but there really is a demand to serve the older set of students, and so we're really working. We recently had a program with Vance High School students and the Entrepreneurs Organization, and we worked with students there to create a business plan for their particular inventions or ideas that they have.
So let me ask you, April, since you're in the studio here, did you work with any, like an organization like Junior Achievement or like DECA or with something else to get started, or did you and your friends, your two partners, just start this?
No, we actually didn't have a program like that, but I wish we did. It would have been really helpful. We just kind of started this and relied on our parents' advice and support and any advice that we gleaned along the way.
So family, what about family. Friends and fools?
Friends were a big part because they were our the first people who bought our bow ties.
Right.
So they were the support for sure. But as far as the fools, I don't know.
Johnny, what about you? I know that you have involvement with DECA at the high school level, which is another organization. Tell me what DECA is.
Well, I started DECA in 10th grade, and what it is most of the schools around the country is doing it, and it's a massive organization that brings kids together from different schools, whether it's at the state level, district level, regional, and national level, and it's what kids come in and they either introduce a project they've been working on or they come in and do a role play with it. And basically what it is mock business role plays or presentations for a project. So you could either go in and talk to a teacher or somebody like that, and they give you a business hypothetical situation and you try to, you know, come up with a solution. But what I did in DECA is I took my paint drop actual business and presented it to a panel of judges in Greensboro at States, did well, and then eventually went on to go to nationals and become a finalist.
And in terms of the three Fs, I'm fascinated by the three Fs, the family, friends, and fools. How did you get the money to start up?
Well, actually, everything really began when I was 14 years old. I was a freshman in high school, and I went to my dad, and I said, you know, I want to throw a party. And he said, what do you mean? And I said, I want to throw a party but sell tickets to my friends for them to go. And I drew out a whole business plan, basically took it down to where the break-even was around 200 tickets sold. We felt like that was a good risk, and he fronted me all the money, but said, when you're done and this event's over, you have to pay me full the night of the event. I mean, after the event, but that night.
Wow.
So the event did well. We sold 900 tickets, and from then on, I've been able to use that money, my own money, to keep going. And 3 years later, I started Paint Drop. Now I'm 17.
So let me get this straight. You made a profit on the first outing?
Yeah, it was unreal.
All right. Lilacs. I have a couple of questions about lilacs.
Uh-huh.
I have many questions, actually, about lilacs. When you started this company, you and your two partners, did you look at this as an opportunity to make money, or did you look at this as an outlet, a creative outlet, or an outlet for your passion, which I think has to do with design and clothing?
Mm-hmm. It was definitely just a fun thing to do. We were excited about the opportunity to create these bow ties and just get together, the three of us, and have this social hour more than a business. And then every time we get paid, it was just kind of like, oh, that's a bonus. Okay. But we definitely weren't in it to start with the money or.
Now, from what I think I understood you to say, Johnny, that's not exactly how you approached them. Although you wanted to have a party, which means you wanted to have fun. You correct me if I'm wrong, you kind of wanted to make money. That was the goal, wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly. It was both. I wanted to not only bring everybody or a lot of my friends in Charlotte together under one roof to have a good time. I did see it as a business and an opportunity to make a little profit.
Is your father a businessman?
Yes, sir.
He sounds like it. He wanted his money back that night. You have two partners, April. Mm-hmm. So are the
yes.
three of you, does anybody in your group have parents who are business people?
Yes. Both Catherine and Sadie both have fathers.
So did they give you guidance on how to keep this on track and to actually not lose money at this venture?
A little bit, yeah. They definitely gave us advice, and my father as well. It was very helpful, but at the same time, it was our own folly if we...
Well, because I understand that you set out to make what? Skirts or dresses?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Our original plan was skirts, dresses, bow ties, ties, and hair bows. And we quickly realized that bow ties were going to be the most profitable.
Why?
With less fabric, less time. We can still charge a lot.
Now, do you actually make these? Or do you hand make these bow ties that I'm holding in my hand?
We do. No. We hand make them.
You hand make a bow tie?
Mm-hmm.
How did you learn how to make a bow tie? Seriously.
The first time we got together, we took out one of Sadie's dad's bow ties, and we made our own pattern and just kind of started figuring out from there. And we've really learned a lot. The first bow tie that we've made is completely different from the one that you're holding in your hand. We've evolved a lot to change it and
make
it better.
What makes a good bow tie? May I take this out of the little plastic?
Absolutely. Okay.
What makes a good bow tie?
The fabric is key. If you get the fabric that's too thin, it just flops and feels cheap. But you don't want it too coarse because then it's too thick. And the ability to adjust it, too. Sometimes the fabric gets thick and it bunches up and it won't adjust.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to find the right fabric.
And why bow ties? Why not long ties?
A
bow tie. Dr. Michael Bitzer, who's a professor of political science at Catawba College, was our guest yesterday, and he wears bow ties. That's what he wears every time I see him. And it takes a brave person to wear a bow tie. So why bow ties?
Yeah, I guess that's just what fashion is dictated in the.
They're
last
hip,
few
they're
years.
Happening.
They're trendy, yeah.
They're trendy.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. Everyone in my school is bow tie.
Really? I've got to get with the program here.
No question.
And I'm going to come to you in a second, Johnny, but let's talk about lilacs. I just noticed when I opened the tie, there's a, even though this is a red, white, and blue kind of American flag-themed tie, on the inside of the tie, there's a little lilac tag with an L on it, which is the symbol for your company. Mm-hmm. Why lilacs? It's L-I-L, small, capital, A-C-S, and company. Why that?
Well, we wanted a name that incorporated our names. We wanted a business name that incorporated our names. So the A stands for April, C for Catherine, and S for Sadie.
Okay. And you've succeeded. We're going to come back and talk about more about just teenagers being entrepreneurs and what kind of endeavors they're involved in, what the pitfalls are, what the success stories are. And we have two success stories with us. And we'll continue to talk about what they're involved in when we come back. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and the Rabin Law Firm, representing individuals who bring legal actions under the False Claims Act and related whistleblower laws to expose fraud against the federal and state governments. Details at usfraudattorneys.com. Well, perhaps you've heard of a new technology called 3D printing. Visionaries say this new process promises to be one of the most important technological advances of our time. 3D printing is able to create, well, things that sound like science fiction. They've already started printing small objects, but one person says eventually you may be able to print an entire house. We'll talk about this emerging technology tomorrow at 9.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, the Acting Secretary of Labor joins us to talk about the U.S. job market, labor laws, and the ongoing push to raise the minimum wage.
Join the Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon after Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about teenage entrepreneurs today with two teenage entrepreneurs, one of whom is April Miller, co-founder along with two other folks, and their names are?
Sadie Pugh and Catherine Crouch.
Okay. Of Lilacs and Company. They make bow ties. And I got to tell you, there are five bow ties sitting on this desk, all of which I would wear. They are really cool bow ties.
Thank you.
Johnny Brooks is with us by phone. He's the founder of a company called Paint Drop, which we're about to find out all about. Daniel Fogel is executive professor of strategy at Wake Forest University Charlotte Center. And Chelsea Cote is director of resource development for junior achievement of the Central Carolinas. So we've alluded to the name of your company, Johnny, and obviously it's a party company because that's what you've told us. It started when you wanted to throw a party for 200 of your closest friends and make a profit, which you did. But tell us about what Paint Drop does. This is what I find really interesting. What does Paint Drop do?
Well, Paint Drop is an electronic dance music event, EDM, that has been traveling around the country, well, really the East Coast, for the past 2 or 3 months, putting on shows that has the DJs, lasers, lights, strobe, fog, everything that goes into an EDM party. But the key factor that makes my show different is paint. And what I mean by that is it's safe neon glow paint that I have shipped over from New Zealand. And at the climax of the EDM show, about an hour into the show, the DJ's playing, everybody's jumping, they're all in white. Everybody comes out in white. Myself and my friends come out with these big cannons, like water cannons, not exactly squirt guns. And at the climax of the show, about an hour and a half in, we blast out the neon glow paint all over the crowd, and they just start going crazy.
Yeah, I'd go crazy. I want to kill you.
The kids love it because they know what they're in for when they come out.
So, and they're wearing white too, or just the people putting on the show are wearing white?
Everybody comes out in white because I have the whole room blacklit. And the paint glows under black light,
sure.
So everyone's glowing in color.
Where did this phenomenon start? Is this your original idea?
No, sir. I wish it was.
So what have you done to change it up? And obviously you've been successful because I have a list of places here. I don't know when this began for you, but I know that you've done this in correct me if I'm wrong, Raleigh, Orlando, Tampa, Houston, Madison, Wisconsin, Cincinnati, and Greenville, North Carolina, among other places, correct?
Yes, those were the spots this past spring.
So what makes your use of paint, covering the crowd in paint, different from anybody else's?
Well, there's really one other company in the U.S. that is doing paint parties, and they're called Life in Color. Now, the difference between Life in Color and Paint Drop is Life in Color is targeting thousands and thousands of people. A minimum show they'll do is 3,000 people. Mm-hmm. The max they'll go is maybe 20,000, and they've gone there before. And they charge anywhere from $50 to $80 a ticket. And it's a $1 million production traveling all over the country, and it's huge. Now, what I wanted to do was I basically thought Life in Color is very successful, but I'd be very happy with just a 1,500-person show in a concert venue, a more intimate experience, and charge these kids $15 to $20 a ticket. So I basically took Life in Color's model and turned it down to like basically a miniature Life in Color, mm-hmm. and just started throwing a more intimate up close and personal paint show.
How smart is that, Dr. Fogel?
Amazing. That's amazing. It's just amazing how people make money, huh?
Yeah. How do you get the venue to agree to a show where you're going to spray the place with paint? Who would rent you a space for that?
It does take a lot of negotiating and a lot of back and forth emails. But what it really comes down to is the paint. It's not the paint we're all thinking of. It's water based paint that the night of the show, I'm there in the back room with a drill mixing this paint with water and this powder solution to create what essentially a thicker water that glows under blacklight. And at the end of the night, you can just take a hose and spray it off, and it just wipes right off, easier than a spilled drink. So I go into these, sometimes I mail out a paint sample to these venues, and they'll test the paint.
Mm-hmm.
But I also let them know that their entire venue will be wrapped in plastic like the inside of a glove. And I basically take pictures of past shows that I've done and prove to them that I can keep their venue clean and all right.
Now, yours is much cleaner, April. Your whole endeavor is much cleaner. How many bow ties do you think you've made since you started your company?
We estimate about 400.
And there are places to buy bow ties right now. If I want to buy a bow tie, I can walk into almost any department store, probably any department store, and buy a bow tie. Mm-hmm. What made you think that people would buy your bow ties over going to Belk, for instance?
Mm-hmm. Well, ours are 100% cotton, which mm-hmm. sets us apart a little bit. And also just providing...
is that part of the Southern charm?
It is.
Okay.
Also just providing different patterns that you wouldn't normally see at a department store. And just the fact that it's not made in probably a sweatshop overseas or anywhere else. It's made in Charlotte and by three girls just... having fun.
And actually, I understand that this started because you go to, you went to Covenant
Day School.
Mm-hmm. And there's chapel once a week.
There is.
And the boys have to wear ties.
Yes.
To chapel. Well, you have a built-in audience, don't you?
Exactly. Worked out real well.
So how did you market these ties to your fellow students?
Mm-hmm. We originally started on Facebook. Well, I mean, word of mouth mm-hmm. first. And then we took it to Facebook, and it really just went from there on Facebook.
So did some of the guys forget to wear ties on chapel days, and so you were standing there at the door saying, well, you need a tie to get in, so here's a tie. Is that how it worked?
That would have been smart.
What do these ties sell for, if I can ask?
Mm-hmm. They sell for $30 each.
So what is a bow tie in a department? I haven't bought a bow tie. So what does a bow tie in a department store cost? More than that, or at least that.
Yes, it can range from anywhere to $40 to $60. Really just depends. It can go higher.
Now, you have to pay sales tax, don't you?
We do. Yes. It's included in the 30. We take it out.
Okay. And you're in the service business, Johnny. You, at least in North Carolina, I would think at this moment, you don't have to deal with that, do you?
I think I do have to pay a 15% state tax because I got incorporated.
Oh, okay.
He thinks.
My dad just handles all the legality.
He's your bookkeeper. I got it. Have you turned a profit yet on this, April?
We have. Absolutely.
Wow, and you've turned a profit as well, Johnny. This is how unusual is that for a teenage entrepreneur on their first outing into the business world as an entrepreneur to turn a profit? Is this extraordinary or is this run of the mill? It just happens.
Well, initially it's probably very typical because they don't have the typical expenses because they get free advice from everybody. It's a lot of sweat equity that they put in. They don't expect to make a lot of money mm-hmm. To support themselves. As they scale up, it's going to get harder and harder to make profit initially. So that's what's going to have to happen. They're going to have to make some investment.
And it strikes me that perhaps both of you are involved in something that is kind of faddy, in that bow ties may not stay in style or be in vogue for all that long amount of time. And these paint raves may also be something that go the way of hullabaloo, to mention an old television show that neither of you ever heard of. Do you have plans to move forward when tastes shift, April?
Well, we've talked about it a little bit. I'm not sure. We're just going to take it into college and see how it goes from there.
Mm-hmm. And what about you, Johnny?
Right now, I don't see electronic dance music fading away too soon. So I'm going to really keep trying to innovate and come up with new ways to make my events different, and really just kind of feel the market and see what they want, whether it's foam, paint, a dry show, basically just feeling what these kids are, if they're getting tired of it or if they want more.
There's a thing called the elevator speech that people prepare in their head so when they're asked what they do or who they are, they can do it in the time it takes to go up an elevator with somebody. If I ask the two of you how you think of yourselves and how you think of your business, what would you tell me? I'll start with you, Johnny.
How I think? I take initiative. I work very hard, and my business is it's very fun, and it's an absolute blast to run. But it has potential to be huge, and that's what I really like to think about.
Mm-hmm. April?
Well, I'd say we're just three girls who love to sew and get together and sell people bow ties.
Okay. There's a guy named, you just reminded me of, Dr. Fogel, named Peter Thiel, who started, what,
right.
PayPal?
Right.
And he told people, this is almost heretical, he said, don't go to college.
Absolutely.
Why?
Well, his idea was
that... college professor that you're promoting this. Right?
Right. Well, I don't know if I'm promoting it, but I think it's a very interesting challenge. Peter was the first Facebook investor and then a co-founder of CEO of PayPal, and he sold PayPal to eBay and then used his money to start Aclarium, which is a foundation, basically, to actually go out and fund young people, high school students, who had great ideas to not go to college, not get a job, but to work on their business. And his initial funding was with 20 teenagers for $100,000 each. And they were obligated to work, obviously, on their business. Mm-hmm. And some of these businesses are world-class. For example, there's a student who got an award out of McLean, Virginia, named Riley Ennis. And he was a high school student who came up with a new cancer treatment. And he was able to convince people at Georgetown at the Sheikh Zayed Institute at the Children's National Medical Center in Washington, D.C. to take this on, and they're developing it together. He won $100,000 to work on this idea. So it's a very interesting program, and Peter's gotten the attention of a lot of college people because they say, well, you need a college education, you'll never make it, and all that. Yet these incredibly bright, energetic students are now given the opportunity to be entrepreneurs and to pursue some of their life dreams.
You know, we've witnessed an incredible rise in the number of business schools at universities, right, and colleges in the last 20 years. And then we've noticed this rise in entrepreneurship. Are the two compatible? Or if you want to be an entrepreneur, do you need to go to business school to be really successful and to maximize your idea into something that will be a big profit maker, or can you just go out there and do it on your own and buy a couple of books?
I think the biggest myth about entrepreneurs and about success is that everybody does it themselves, alone. They all need a network. They all need information. How you get that information and support can vary a lot. So business schools are one avenue that can teach excellent skills. The timing of that, though, could actually be better if it's later after you've tried a venture. You have a context for the information.
So, in other words, become an entrepreneur, try something, succeed or fail, and then go to business school to shore it up.
And most are going to fail a couple times. That's right, which is no big deal. It's a great learning lesson.
Thomas Edison. Was it Thomas Edison who
Absolutely.
Said you need to fail? Do you teach kids this at the fifth grade level?
Absolutely. We definitely do. I actually recently just taught some of the JA curriculum in a classroom. And the thing I love about JA is it's so hands-on and so interactive. And I worked with third graders, and they started from the beginning of starting a business, and they looked at the demand in the community. So they looked at different polls that had been conducted throughout the curriculum to see what type of restaurant they should have. And then they looked at all of the cost of the raw materials and what they needed to charge for their, they decided on an Italian restaurant, so what they needed to charge for their pizza in order to turn a profit. They looked at resumes to see the different type of individuals that they needed to hire and what would be a best fit for their business needs. And then they ultimately created an advertisement that was going to be read on the radio or in the paper to market their business. And so we do start very early. We feel like the entrepreneurial spirit is something that is in students when they're very young.
What is motivating these kids to be interested in that sort of thing? You know, kids in the fifth grade want to be school teachers and firemen and movie stars and think, what motivates them to want to take the time to look into how am I going to make money if I make pizza?
Absolutely. Well, students, I think, at a young age are very – they are able to see all of the possibilities. And one of the things that I've noticed recently just in reading some of our evaluations that we conduct with our younger students is that they're able to express that they really do want to go to college at a young age, and they all think that they're going to. And I think that they're very idealistic and they're able to be creative at a young age. And that's something that JA really helps to maximize at a young age and really facilitate as they get older.
Johnny, it strikes me that you had a motivation to make a profit on that first outing because your father wanted his money back the minute the thing was over. Did it ever occur to you that you might lose money and owe your father money?
Yes, that occurred to me, but I put in place a promotional plan that was really different from what any other concert in Charlotte has really ever done. And I felt that with the promotional plan that I had in place, there was really virtually no way that I would not break even at that 200 ticket.
Where did that come from? Where did that kind of knowledge to develop a plan that no one had ever done and have the confidence that it would work because it was so unusual? Where did that come from in you?
I don't know. I to be honest, it came in a dream. And let me just explain that this sort of plan that I came up with when I was in high school doing these Charlotte shows. Basically, I thought all these kids who are going to want to buy a ticket, they don't have credit cards, so they don't want to go online and click the ticket link and get their parents and have the credit card put in and all that. So what I did is I went around to TCBY, the country's best yogurt. Mm-hmm. It's a frozen yogurt chain. They have 8 locations in Charlotte.
You must work for them. You've given them a great plug. You must work for them. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
And I put in about 200 tickets in each location and then told everybody through Facebook in a Facebook public event, mm-hmm. this is where you can go buy your tickets for $10, hard copy, right in your local TCBY. And all of a sudden, I just got these phone calls from TCBY. You know, we need more tickets. The 250 are gone. And then before I knew it, it was sold out at 900, and I was just like, that's what I need. I need a place to sell hard copy tickets for these kids.
I'm going to come back in the next segment and talk about social media, but very quickly in the 40 seconds that I have left, mm-hmm. $30 is a lot of money for some teenagers. Do you take credit cards? How do you accept payment for these things?
We take credit card, debit card, check, or cash.
Anybody ever stiffed you? Any checks ever bounce?
Not yet.
That's April Miller, his co-founder, along with two other folks with Lilacs and Company. They make bow ties, and quite nice ones, actually. Johnny Brooks is founder of Paint Drop. It's a paint rave kind of business. Daniel Fogel is executive professor of strategy at Wake Forest University Charlotte Center, and Chelsea Cody is director of resources development for junior achievement of the Central Carolinas. We are coming right back. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Audi of Charlotte, presenting a selection of luxury vehicles committed to customer service and satisfaction. East Independence Boulevard, inside the 485 Beltway. Audi, truth and engineering. Information at audiofcharlotte.com. The Diane Rehm Show coming up in about 20 minutes. In the first hour, the U.S. job market. The acting Secretary of Labor, Seth Harris, will talk to Diane about minimum wage and the U.S. job market in the first hour. And then at 11, it's decision day for the Supreme Court rulings on same-sex marriage. A panel of experts join Diane to provide analysis of the court's final decisions of the term. That's coming up in just a few minutes. If you'd like to join our conversation, you can do so. WFAE.org/Charlotte Talks is a great way to do it, and we're coming right back.
The Charlotte Symphony's Summer Pops Finale honors Independence Day with Celebrate America, a patriotic concert featuring Tchaikovsky's 1812 Overture, the music of John Philip Sousa, and more. Plus, fireworks following the concert at Symphony Park next Wednesday evening, July 3rd. Details available at charlottesymphony.org. WFAE is pleased to be a media partner.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHEM. Mike Collins. We're talking about teen entrepreneurship. And in the break here in the studio, Johnny Brooks, founder of Paint Drop, talking to us by phone from Myrtle Beach. There are several people had some nuts and bolts questions, like how much do you charge to get into your rave? I think people want to go. where did you put the first one on?
To get into Paint Drop, you really only need anywhere from $10 to $20. And that changes and varies per city.
Depending upon your costs, show, right? Depending upon your costs.
Exactly, mm-hmm. Exactly. And my first show was in November in Greensboro, North Carolina at Green Street Club.
Now, the three of you, April Miller and your two co-founders with Lilacs and Company, are going off to college in the fall, and you're going off to different colleges in the fall.
Mm-hmm.
What will this do to your business?
Well, we look at it as a way to market to different areas that we never would be able to reach otherwise. So we'll take as many bow ties as we make this summer and each take them to our school and try to sell them all.
And you've already chosen your school, but one of you should choose Catawba College and the other should choose Winthrop University, because I know two political science professors who wear bow ties at both of those colleges.
You'd
have a built-in sales stream there.
Yeah.
What about you, Johnny? Are you going to college, or are you pursuing this as a business venture that will make you some money and give you a good life?
No, I'm going to University of South Carolina, but I'm definitely keeping the Paint Drop tour going. A lot of the weekends I'll be at college, I'll be traveling to these different cities putting on these shows.
Hmm. Now, Dr. Fogel, you point to several changes in the world at large that may be helpful to entrepreneurs, and one of them actually surprised me in that you say now access to capital used to be a problem, and today it is relatively easy, and that really kind of surprised me, because we hear, as a result of the recession, that there's no money out there to be had. Nobody wants to lend anybody money or invest in anything. That's not true.
I don't buy that, no. So we have the structure of the capital markets has changed. So now you have venture capitalists. We actually have words for these stages of funding for entrepreneurs and small businesses. We have mezzanine financing, equity firms.
What kind of venture capitalist?
Absolutely none would do a startup business.
Okay.
That's what you have to do, bootstrap financing in most cases. However, if the idea is a world class idea that's scalable, that actually is solving a huge problem in the world,
right,
you might get some funding.
I don't know whether it's solving a huge problem,
right,
but the Paint Drop thing sounds fun.
That's right.
So, I mean, if he has a track record of success,
yeah,
could he go to a venture capitalist and say, I want to turn this into Live Nation?
Eventually, absolutely. Why not? Because as long as he can prove that it's scalable, that they can make money, the thing that might be distasteful to him, though, is the venture capitalist going to say, what's your exit strategy? When are you going to sell so we can make our money back?
And what about the bow tie business? Because that could expand into skirts and dresses, which was the original idea. But what about this? If they have a track record designing desirable bow ties, and they're very attractive, and they appear to be very well made, and they have a track record of being successful with selling these things. What do they have to tell a venture capitalist to upscale this thing to say, I'm different from all the other, from Countess Mara and anybody else who makes ties in the world?
Well, venture capitalists are very sensitive about who's doing the business. So they're going to ask a lot of questions about them, their commitment, and what they can do. Second thing is, this is scalable. And it's not scalable when you have to make the bow ties yourself. So they're going to have to find a way to manufacture, if you will, the bow ties. Another third thing is that we're going to have to get a way to market these things. It could be through social media. It could be different ways from historically. But there are going to have to be ways to get the word out there and create equity in the firm. And that's really important for them.
And equity in the firm means?
Means that they have a customer base that's reliable, that it's going to grow, that they have expenses under control, that they have some manufacturing under their belt or contract manufacturing. Supply of materials is going to be critical in this, because the quality of the supply of the materials is going to dictate the quality of the product.
I mean, I would think, correct me if I'm wrong, that you are somewhat limited in how much you can grow because you're about to go off to college, all three of you, and you're the ones doing the sewing, correct?
Right, correct.
I mean, could you continue this? Have you investigated farming out the manufacture of these ties to commercial manufacturing plants?
Right. We have talked about the possibility of that and looked into it a
little bit. Does that
decrease
the patina of the product because it's no longer handmade, it's now manufactured?
Uh-huh. That's one of the cons that we've considered.
So have you considered what the answer to that is, or do you just stay small until you get out of college, and if you still enjoy doing this, then you bring in people to hand make them with you? What have you thought about?
That's probably the verdict that we're leaning towards, but we haven't closed any doors yet.
And what about you, Johnny? Because going to college is a full time job. So doing these on the side, I suppose college is you'll make connections with partiers, because college is a party opportunity. How do you see growing your business or even maintaining it while taking a full course load?
Well, the great thing about my business is really I can put a show together in a few hours as long as the emails come back and forth and contracts come back and forth. So everything can really just be done in my dorm room, and then I can spend the weekends traveling.
Let's talk about advertising. You've mentioned the use of Facebook and putting tickets at the TCBY locations. How did you advertise your product, April?
It was mostly by word of mouth, and then we actually were featured in the Charlotte Observer, which gave us a lot of publicity. And through that, we were able to go to the Charlotte Steeplechase, and we were the only outside vendor there. So that gave us a lot more publicity. And then
people actually buy the ties at the Steeplechase?
Oh, you wouldn't believe how many ties we sold.
Wow. So now what about marketing? Because a startup doesn't have a lot of money, and most startups are concerned about developing and creating a quality product that people will want to continue to buy. So what about marketing for a startup? Is social media a valid way to do this, or is it a sustainable way to do it?
Well, yeah, it's probably the only way, because any business that's small and young and relies on marketing, it's really dangerous because it's so expensive and it's so difficult to do. So they're lucky that they've gotten the response that they have.
Well, do young people have a leg up? Because young people really understand social media. They get Facebook, and it's like they were born with that as a part of their brain, where older people still have to get accustomed to it. Do they have a leg up on this?
They probably do, and I think also that they have a story to tell that's appealing to people. So I'm buying from somebody that's young and energetic and rising. I think that story is a great part of the marketing.
Do you talk about this with younger people who Junior Achievement works with about the need to act? You may have a great idea, but if nobody knows about it, then you're not going to be successful. Do you talk about that?
Absolutely. We definitely incorporate that into all of our curriculums, especially the upper grade curriculums. We have one called Be Entrepreneurial that really walks them through creating a business plan and focuses very heavily on marketing and advertising. In addition to that, I think we've noticed just in working with young people how technically savvy they are, how they're thinking in terms of creating ideas and products that are technical and do meet those needs in the internet and otherwise, creating apps and different things like that.
I would think that one of the important things is once you get the word out, somebody buys your product or uses your product, in Johnny's case, that you would want them to be repeat customers. Mm-hmm. You wear bow ties out so they could come back and buy another bow tie.
Right.
How many times do people go to paint raves, Johnny? Do you rely at all on repeat customers, or is your idea to get new people into this thing all the time? And is that more difficult?
It's new people every time, and it is difficult. But if you come up with the right promotional plan and you really use everybody to your advantage, like different promoters, local promoters, and college students who are very popular and things like that, then the word can get spread to your market.
Mm-hmm. Now, does the paint come out of clothing? So if I wear my lilacs bow tie to your rave and get paint all over, can I wash it out and wear it again? Or should the two of you partner so that everybody has to wear a bow tie and they can sell more on the way out?
The paint does come out in 24 hours if you wash it. So I do tell everybody, you got to wash your clothes within 24 hours or it might stain. But it's good about washing out if you do get it in the wash when you get home.
And everybody who comes to these events knows what they're getting into. There's nobody who's going to be surprised or angry that they got wet or they got covered with paint, correct?
Absolutely, yeah. We let them know through promotional videos, and our flyer really just lets you know paint will be blasted all over the crowd.
Let's talk about passion. Because I mentioned in the beginning of the show that we were going to meet two people who have turned their passion into profit. And that is the case with both April and Johnny. They came up with ideas that they liked. They have a good time doing them. And they're making money at this. But I have heard recently, and I read something that you wrote, Dr. Fogel, recently as well. And it really, when I first heard this, it shocked me because I have always been told, always since I can remember as a little boy, follow your heart, follow your passions, and that you'll be fine because work won't be work and you will make money. And I read this a couple of months ago from somebody else, and then I read it from you saying, don't follow your passions because you're not going to make any money because you'll do it for free because you love it.
Yeah. And there's more than that. I just think that it's wrongheaded advice because it creates a frustration amongst young people that they say, I don't have a passion. What do I do? And I think what the best advice is, make a commitment, experiment with something, see how it goes, learn from that, and keep pushing hard. It's hard work to do a business. It's hard work to make it through life. And this notion about finding passion just is wrongheaded, and it creates such a frustration amongst people.
Is this a new way of thinking? Is this a recently
developed? Oh, I think I'm in the minority. I think a lot of people think it's such a great piece of advice because it sounds good. It sounds like, oh, I'm passionate about something.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, entrepreneurs, for example, there's a lot of research done on entrepreneurs, and one thing we know is that they're constant opportunity seekers. They go out and they see opportunities. They see places where they can solve problems. And they commit to solving those problems. That's what makes them successful, the commitment. And they enjoy it because they get the response back, they make money, they get people saying you're doing a great job, they enjoy it, and that then creates this increasing commitment. And we can call it passion if you want to ultimately, but
they're getting positive reinforcement right on many different levels and many different fronts. Yeah. They're making money. That's telling them they're doing something right. People like the product. That tells them they're doing something right, and they enjoy what they're doing because they're getting all this positive feedback.
That's right. And they're learning. They're learning how to do things. And even if they fail at the venture, they feel like they succeeded.
But the two of you, Johnny and April, sound like you are passionate about what you do. You wanted to start your paint drop business. You wanted to start this bow tie business,
mm-hmm,
April.
Right.
Are you passionate about this, or would you be just as happy in the paint drop business as long as you were making money? And Johnny, would you be just as happy making bow ties if you were making money? April, I'll start with you.
I don't know. I think that sewing and coming up with the design of picking out the fabrics and all that, I think that does have a lot to do with why we love it so much and why we love coming into work and why we're good at what we do.
Johnny?
I think I'll always want to plan, promote, and execute fun events for people. That's just what I love to do.
You know, I've talked to a lot of promoters and worked with a lot of promoters and event people over the years because of what I do, and you sound, just from the sound of your voice, you sound like a promoter. You are in the right business. Nothing pejorative about that. It's just that you sound like one. Bow ties, the fabric, it's design, isn't it? It's not just the fact that you're making bow ties. Would you be equally happy being an interior designer?
Mm-hmm. And that's actually what I'm majoring in. Yes,
okay.
Yes, sir.
Let me take a phone call here from, if I can get my thing to work here, my little computer. There we go. From Vince in Charlotte. Vince, welcome to the program.
Hi, I'm glad I caught the last end of this. I'm certainly coming back at 9 this evening to get the rest. I work for a marketing agency, unnamed. A large number of our clients, about a third, are coming through Kickstarter. And I just wanted to weigh in on the conversation that marketing is expensive. If you have the right model, if you can, there's even other agencies out here in Charlotte that will build your e-commerce site, pay for performance. You know, they'll take the cost of doing it up front. And there's been some very successful businesses started on that. And I also just wanted to add that Ben Craig out of UNC Charlotte is a tremendous small business incubator. I mean, some of these businesses may be a little small for that, but there's some great groups and venture capitalists that meet out of there, too. And in general, the community here is vibrant, and there's marketing agencies willing to do the work if the idea is good.
Excellent. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Thank you for your call.
Excellent point. And this shows that there's a lot of infrastructure developing behind entrepreneurs and small businesses, small business centers, incubators, et cetera.
How do you know when you have a good idea? I would think that a lot of people are reluctant to come out of the box with something because they think, well, it's not so special, I can't afford to lose money, and it's going to be a lot of work, and it's just not good enough. And maybe they have a great idea. How do you approach the possibility of failure? What do you tell people?
I don't know how to answer how do you know when you have a great idea, but I think the beauty of young entrepreneurs is that they don't necessarily have anything to lose. So they're really eager to market the ideas that they do have and to really essentially work to make them into a successful business without necessarily having a lot of risk involved.
Most of the time I spend with entrepreneurs is asking them, is this solving a real need? Is this solving a real interest of people to buy your product or not?
Would you have thought Paint Drop would be solving a real need?
I don't know that population, but it sounds like he's got something in his pocket.
Well, I can tell you a lot of these kids, they don't really have much to do, these 17, 16-year-old kids, and I like to include them in my events.
Okay. Johnny Brooks is founder of Paint Drop. April Miller is co-founder of